A New York woman who was forced to pay more than $350,000 in federal estate taxes on her inheritance from her same-sex spouse has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to hear her case. Edie Windsor and Thea Speier were married in Canada in 2007, but when Speier died in 2009, the federal government, under the Defense of Marriage Act, refused to recognize their relationship and treated them as legal strangers by taxing Windsor's inheritance from her wife. Windsor sued and won in a ruling that found the Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional. That ruling is currently on appeal in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. This is the third case against DOMA that the Supreme Court is being asked to consider. James Essex, director of the American Civil Liberties Union's LGBT Project, says the Supreme Court is almost certain to take up the challenges to DOMA within the coming year.
And we thought that Edie's particular story was an important story and made an important contribution to the discussion about the constitutionality of DOMA. And so we filed the cert petition in order to say to the court, look, here's another example of the kinds of harms that DOMA inflicts every day on married same-sex couples. And basically, if you're looking for a vehicle or looking for another case that presents this question, here we are.
The two other cases, one in the First Circuit in Boston and one in the Ninth Circuit out in San Francisco, both are against the Office of Professional Management for denial of spousal benefits. How does Edie Windsor's case differ?
This is Edie's story. Edie and her long-term partner and then spouse, Thea Speier, met in Greenwich Village in the early 60s. In 1965, they became a couple. And in 1967... Thea proposed to Edie, said they wanted to get married, and Edie said yes. But, of course, it was 1967, and few people were thinking about gay people getting married back then. But that's just how they thought about their relationship. And so from 65 until 2009, when Thea died, they lived together in sickness and in health and made that kind of a commitment to each other. Starting in 77, Thea was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which, you know, causes progressive paralysis. And so over the course of 30-plus years, Thea had greater problems moving. So she ended up using crutches and then a manual wheelchair and then a motorized wheelchair when she was really a paraplegic. And in 07, Edie and Thea decided to go to Canada to get married there because the freedom to marry wasn't available to same-sex couples in New York yet. And then 2 years after they get married, Thea finally dies. And, of course, she leaves all of her stuff, the apartment they had shared for decades, etc., to her spouse, to Edie. And while the state of New York recognized them as spouses at that point, the federal government doesn't recognize them as spouses because of the Defense of Marriage Act. And so while a straight widow would have had to pay no estate tax at all, in Edie's situation, she had to pay over $363,000 to the IRS in estate tax. And we filed her case in part because we think it's hard for anybody to hear that story and think that that's the right result, that people who have shared their lives for 44 years made that kind of a commitment to each other and are legally married under New York state law. How does it make any sense for the federal government to pretend that these are people who are legal strangers to each other? And how does it make any sense for her to have to pay a tax that any other married couple wouldn't have to pay?
What does this do to the Supreme Court's consideration of DOMA as a whole, considering that the other two cases that it is taking up involve denial of benefits rather than state taxes or other aspects of marriage law?
I think it adds just another example of the kinds of harms that DOMA inflicts on married same-sex couples. So just to put it a little bit more in perspective, at this point, there are about 130,000 married same-sex couples in the United States, married either in one of the six states plus D.C. that allow same-sex couples to marry, or married in Canada or one of the other countries in the world that allow same-sex couples to marry. At the same time, there are over 1,100 different federal statutes and programs that depend in one context or another on whether you're married. So your benefits or your protections under federal law, whether it's tax benefits, whether it's your eligibility for health care coverage for your spouse, whether it's your ability to sponsor a spouse for citizenship, in many, many different contexts, whether you're married or not makes a difference under federal law. So all 130,000 married same-sex couples are treated as legal strangers in all of those 1,100-plus different contexts. And so what the court has before it in the case from the First Circuit and the case from the Ninth Circuit and Edie's case is a range of different contexts in which the same harm, or the same kind of harm, is inflicted on different married same-sex couples.
Is there a danger that if the court does not consider a range of discriminations at the time that it has its hearings, it would have to take them up individually or in lumps to reach the full range of benefits that have been denied under DOMA?
Well, that's possible. Certainly the Supreme Court is going to pick at least one of these cases either this year or next year, one context in which to address the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act. If, as we hope, the court ends up concluding that the Defense of Marriage Act violates the federal constitution, that will technically decide it only for that specific context. We think it's likely that other courts will agree in short order that DOMA is unconstitutional more broadly. I think that it could be helpful to the court to take a number of different factual contexts at once in order to make it clear from the beginning that this isn't just about the estate tax or isn't just about access to health care, but instead is a problem that infects DOMA across the board.
So you're saying we should have a hearing on one of these cases by the end of the term next June. How soon will we have a ruling?
Assuming the court takes one of these cases, it would probably take it in September or October. Argument would probably be in January or February, and there'd be a decision by June of 2013. Our hope is that the court takes all of these cases because then it would have quite the array of different harms to consider. And I think the more different contexts the court considers, the better our chances of the court realizing that this is just unfair and un-American.
James Essex is director of the LGBT Project at the American Civil Liberties Union.